You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene Johnson.
Maria Menounos and Bing.com present live from the Kari Feinstein Oscar Style Lounge at the world-famous Mondrian Hotel on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, California. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Movie Edition. Tonight's AfterBuzz movie is Moneyball. We'll break down everything from the making of Moneyball to behind the scenes and everything in between. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite movie, it's AfterBuzz TV's Moneyball.
Well, hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another AfterBuzz TV podcast. We're here at the Kari Feinstein Oscar-style lounge gift suites at the Mondrian Hotel in on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. Yes. Okay, for the next few days, we're going to be podcasting here. We're talking about movies. We've had a few stars come by already. You never know who's going to be coming in. We'll hopefully get them to sit down with us, chat with us about the movie. Get their take, their reactions to the experience and being in the films themselves. So until then, I'm your host, John Comerford, and I'm joined on the panel by Steve Bottomley.
Hello.
We've got Kim Lai here.
Hey.
And Christopher Joseph.
Hello.
And what we'll be talking about first is Moneyball.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoy. First of all, just initial reactions, let's get into a little bit, and then we'll really dissect it. So I was surprised by how much I liked that. I'm a sports guy anyway. I like sports, but more than that, I like film. And I thought this was I don't even know how they adapted the book with all the stats, but I really liked this movie. I liked it more than I thought I would.
Well, and you were saying earlier that you actually liked the mathematical part
about
it.
I did.
I found out the reason why before this movie I didn't actually like baseball as much as I thought I did. I don't get me and math.
Yeah,
we do
not go well
together.
Of all
it's
the sports,
like
baseball is all stats. I mean, that's what it's really about.
The percentages of all the aspects.
Oh, it's crazy.
The outfield, the batting.
Right.
Was it so statistical though before?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Sabermetrics came out.
From day one.
Oh, okay.
Say that word again.
Yeah. Sabermetrics. That's a big word.
I thought it
was. Oh, look at, we got somebody here already.
I won't be.
Well, let's bring him on up.
Hey.
Oh, we're Stephen
Bishop.
Yeah, we got
come
Stephen
on up.
Bishop.
Here we go. This has been great.
Bye.
Right, is he good to go?
Yeah.
Well, until he steps, I just want to say real quick, I thought it was a perfect blend of baseball and just the fascinating human story about the people that are trying to change the game.
The story behind the game.
Absolutely.
Yeah. About one man.
And not a real huge baseball fan, but after this movie, I'm kind of like going, I think I've got a little bit more.
You're
going to
give it another try.
I thoroughly enjoyed it as well.
And here we have stepping in with us is Mr. Stephen Bishop.
Here we are.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Bishop.
Very pleased to have you.
How are you? Nice to meet you, too.
Steve, of course, played Derek Justice.
David Justice.
David Justice. I had a brain freeze. I beg your pardon.
Just say DJ.
Yeah. I know. I'm
okay, right?
But big shoes to fill in the baseball world.
Yeah.
Who was telling me that he talked about having you play him?
Yeah.
What was the story?
I was watching an interview and of you. And you were saying how you had met with David Justice, and he had said that I wouldn't have anyone else play the part but you.
Right. That was after I had already booked it. David and I have been friends for about 16 years.
Okay.
When I was a minor leaguer with the Braves, he was a major leaguer. And, you know, the resemblance was so uncanny that, you know, everybody was talking about it, and I was getting confused for him, you know, walking around the complex. And so, you know, he took me under his wing and was telling everybody, hey, look, this is my little brother. You know, you treat him like you treat me.
It works.
And so, you know, David and I have been friends for a long time. So when I booked the job, I told him that, you know, I called him and I told him, hey, you're never going to guess who's playing you in a film. And he's like, you know, that's when he said, you know, I couldn't think of anybody that I'd rather have do it.
Wow.
Did he give you any pointers? Like, did he help you out with, I mean, I know you were already a professional player, but did he give you any words of advice or wisdom on playing him in the movie?
No.
You better do that. You better make sure you don't do that.
No, he knew that I was going to do my best to make him look as good as possible, because we're really good friends. And what I did do was get some insight from him as to where his mind mind state was in that point of his career.
Uh-huh.
You know, did you know this was going to be your last year? Did you think you were going to play more? That kind of thing. What was your relationship with Billy Beane like, really? What was your relationship like with the rest of the players? Were you a leader in the club? That kind of thing. Just to know where he was coming from at the time. So that was very helpful. But from other than that, he really just let me do my thing.
That's great.
You know, it was fortunately it came out well.
It came out very well.
Yeah, I love the batting cage scene. I mean, you had you had great swagger in that. I mean,
you do cocky
good
well.
Attitude there.
That was nice.
Good attitude.
That's funny.
Really good.
No, it was a great scene between the two of you. That's where the real meat of, I feel like, your relationship with Billy Beane kind of took hold.
Yeah, you know, when I read the script, I looked at that scene and I was like, okay, that's going to be the point in the movie for this character that makes or breaks him.
Right.
And, you know, fortunately, when we started filming that, I wasn't supposed to be hitting. I was supposed to hit and then stop.
Okay.
And then when we started to film, I talked to Bennett before, you know, after rehearsal.
Yeah.
I said, how about I just keep hitting through the scene and I'll talk in between swings.
And were you actually cracking the balls?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You were really hitting them, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I said that to him was because...
No, I meant the sound, you know, like...
Yeah, the reason I asked him about that because I was hitting so well at the moment.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? Let's just do it.
Yeah.
I'm squaring up the ball perfectly right now, so let's run it through. Yeah. He's like, are you sure you're going to be able to hit all of them on cue and not... And I'm like...
Yeah.
It feels good right now. Let's try.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, serendipity came in and it allowed me to just hit. I hit every single ball right on the screen.
I'm telling you, it was incredible. I watched the movie again just today before we came in, and that is one of my favorite scenes. Just watching you crack the balls, locking in on Billy Beane. I'm just like, he really.
Yeah, it seemed like that. That's how it really happens. They take a swing, they talk.
Yeah,
I gotta say, did you? Because you have a very sweet swing. That looked amazing.
I appreciate it.
Is that your swing?
Yeah, that was my swing.
Are you emulating Justice?
Oh my goodness.
This is the thing. I was emulating David's swing.
Because he's got a very
Because
distinctive.
I'm a right-handed hitter.
Oh my God.
And he's left-handed.
I did not. That's great.
I had switch.
Yeah, I'm hitting
you
on the other
switch.
Side.
Okay, you were cracking the ball and you were switched up.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Oh, that's impressive.
I mean,
that's
I have to give some credit to... first of all, as a kid, when you play... I played baseball all my life.
Sure.
And as a kid, I grew up playing a game called All-Star, where it would be me and one of my buddies, and we would each pick a National League and an American League All-Star team.
Okay.
And when you hit,
you had to hit
like that guy.
Oh.
So, you know, I spent my whole life switching back and forth. And then when I... as I grew up, for some reason was able to stay left, you know, my left-handed swing stayed good.
Yeah.
I think my mother actually taught me how to hit when I was 2 years old.
Okay.
My mother's left-handed.
Okay.
So what happened was she taught me how to hit left-handed. And when I was four, I was in daycare, and there was a Little League park outside of my daycare. And I wandered away from daycare into the Little League park and asked the coach if I could play.
Nice.
And he humored me, and he let me play. And I got in the box with a left-handed grip, but on the right side.
Okay.
And so instead of turning me around, he said, no, son, you've got your hands backwards. So in that moment, he turned me into a right-handed hitter.
Wow.
And
so
I never went back. I was like,
he
made me go here. And so from that point, I never went back and became a right-handed hitter.
Oh, my God.
But for some reason, the mechanics of hitting left-handed came so natural, I think because I learned it first.
Well, it showed in that scene.
Yeah, man.
That was,
you had me fooled.
I have to give credit, though, to Chad Kruder, who is the technical advisor for the film. And he's also the former head coach at USC. Chris Pratt and myself worked out at USC every day for 3 weeks before we started filming. So that I had a chance to groove my left-handed swing, because I couldn't just go in and swing. It had to look like a major league superstar swing.
You got your muscle memory back as an actor and as an athlete.
That was a point that one of the producers had made, was since baseball fans are so rabid about accuracy and about stats and everything, that they were really concerned about the fans saying, I can't get in this movie because he's not doing it right.
And that
Major League Baseball worked really closely with them to make sure that all of that was just right.
With David, he has a really distinctive swing, you know, and there's movements in his swing that, you know, he's famous for. Like the high leg kick and then the foot. If you notice when, you remember the scene where they walk me?
Yes.
And I kick my foot out before I step down. That's his move.
Right.
When I throw the bat and I take the elbow pad off, his move.
Yeah.
You know, the whole stance, him talking to himself.
You fooled me when you came in. I was like, David Justice, or is that someone else? I mean, it really is uncanny.
It's
a question. Does he hit switch? Can he hit switch?
You know, I don't think he can. We play golf, and he's a left-handed golfer.
Okay.
So I haven't seen him even hit a golf ball right-handed. I don't think he's a switch hitter.
Well, you got something on him.
But why would he be? He is a superstar on the left side.
Knowing your story, I'm kind of like, you got one up on him.
I don't know. You know, he used to be married to Halle Berry.
Absolutely.
You know, now he's got another beautiful wife, Rebecca.
I was giving you props. You just went.
We got a long way to catch up to David.
Let's talk a little bit about you being on set and how that process was for you. Did you enjoy the experience of that set?
Oh, I loved it. It was the thing about that set for me was it was a lump of everything I had ever done and everything I had ever wanted to do in one big ball. You know, I was playing baseball. I was playing in a stadium that I grew up going to games to watch. I was playing for a team that I grew up watching. I was playing my teenage idol, and I was doing it opposite Brad Pitt.
It's like the moon's aligned.
Yeah, everything. My mother called it serendipity.
Truly.
I couldn't have asked for a better opportunity, and you know, fortunately, everything came together.
And I just want to say, and you held your own against Brad Pitt in that batting. Yeah, keep going back to that scene, but that was a scene where I'm looking at both of those actors. I'm going, they're on equal ground right there.
Well, that was pretty solid.
I thought the power of that scene was in your corner.
It was, because if we don't buy that, you finally go, okay, I don't know what you're doing here. I'm not really buying into it, but that by the end of the scene, you've bought into it. If you don't buy into it, as an audience, we don't buy into it. And it rests on your shoulders.
The way you bought into it, you just gave kind of a real subtle sort of, okay. Was there a discussion about how much to give up in that moment? Did you and Bennett kind of go, was he like on... It was such a subtle sort of minimalist...
You did it?
Great moment.
No, you know, the thing about Bennett was he really gave me space, you know, to just do what I did. And when we were shooting that scene, he actually came into the cage. This is funny. He came into the cage in the middle of the scene. And he's like, okay, listen. Whatever you're doing, stay right there. He's like, this is awesome. He's like, you're going to love this. And he walked away. And it was like, you know.
That's all you needed to know.
I knew that being in the comfort zone of hitting while I was doing it was going to make me go back to my days as a player.
Sure.
And when a coach or a manager would come in and say something like that, there's a sacred place, the batting cage, you know, when we're under the tunnel. It's kind of like, hey, come on, let me do my work here. But I have to be honest, I knew that scene was going to be what you say it is. And when I read it and when I was preparing for it, and I was a little nervous about it until Brad, after the first rehearsal, they say cut on rehearsal. Brad looks at me, looks me up and down, and he goes, huh, you got some skills, don't you? Pat me on the back and walked away.
No!
And how'd you feel? What were you thinking?
What I did was I looked around.
Did anybody else see that?
I was like, Brad Pitt just gave me so much love. Okay, let's run it. Because to have the guy who's carrying the film give you that kind of love, it puts so much confidence in me that I felt free to do whatever it is I felt at the moment. And my acting, you know, I'm not a formulaic actor. I go strictly on instinct. And what you see there was instinct.
You oozed the confidence. I mean, it just spewed out of you, and it was just such a cool moment in the film. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Did you know after reading the script that you wanted to do this film, or did you have to think about it for a little bit?
I got to be honest. I knew that Okay. I had a strong belief that this was my part before I read the script.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Really?
I've said for a long time that if they ever made a movie about baseball and David Justice was in it, I'd be playing him. I look exactly like the guy. We are, I mean, when we first met, we were, it was eerie how much we looked alike. Mm-hmm. Plus, I, you know, I
well,
knew so much
too.
About him.
Yeah.
I copied his swing. I grew up mm-hmm. watching him and knowing him. And then he's my big brother, you know. It just, I knew. There was a part of me that knew. I was sitting in my agent's office, and I got a text that said, hey, there's a movie called Moneyball, and there's a part called for David Justice. You might want to look into it.
Might want to.
I look at my agent,
maybe.
I say,
hey,
hold.
I said, forget what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
We have to call them. We have to call this casting office immediately and tell them I got to come in. Right then and there on the spot, we sent them pictures. We actually put pictures of me and him together sent them over there. And within 2 days, I had an audition.
That's amazing.
So, how was the audition?
Okay, right,
because they went after a lot of athletes.
There was over 1,000.
Right.
Not just
now,
for that part,
when
but
you
in
went
general.
In, did they know about your chops or skills and wanted to see if you could act? Or did they go, well, you're an actor that looks like him, but can you play baseball? I mean, what was that like where you had to prove two things to these guys?
I went in as an actor.
Okay.
A lot of the guys that you saw in the film went in for baseball tryouts first.
Sure.
And then they came and to see if they could act at all. I went in as an actor and had 2 auditions before I ever had to swing a bat or
really?
Throw.
Okay. Okay.
They knew I was a professional, you know, they knew that I was, a professional baseball player. They knew that, so they were like, okay, we don't really need to worry about his skill set. But my acting was what they wanted to see. They wanted to see,
right.
Could I carry this part? Could I go up against Brad Pitt and Jonah and hold my own, you know? Could I do this type of thing? And I had been acting for a long time, so it was like I said, again, serendipitous. I mean, I was in the right place in my life and in my career at the right time. And, you know, it was funny. I knew, when I say I knew, when we did the first audition, they asked me about my baseball skills and my experience, and I told them what I had done, and I told them how I knew David, and I say, you know, I have to say this because this is how I feel. There's no one on earth more prepared to play this role than I am, unless you go get David.
Which there's that swagger and that confidence
the perfect role
together.
And, you know, maybe Bennett saw that and was like, you know what?
That's the guy.
Well, you know?
I'll say I won't forget the humor part of the, I call it the Fruit Loop scene.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Was Applejack?
It Applejack?
I actually requested them to put Applejacks in that bowl because I was like, look, if I'm going to sit here and eat this, I want it to be
my favorite.
Everybody was eating in that movie.
Good luck with
that.
Yeah, hey, good luck. You know, and that, I'll be honest with you, that was improv.
Oh, was it?
That line?
Oh, that was perfect.
Hey, we got a question for you. Go ahead.
So, for the beginning of the season, when you're now on the team, or Dave Justice's character, there's one banner hanging.
The one banner.
My question is, was that banner there, and did you get to take it home?
That banner was there.
Uh-huh.
I was offered to take it home, but I turned it down because it was so big.
I know.
That there would be nothing I could do with it.
Yeah, okay.
And then somebody said, you know what? You could make it like the carpet in a room or something.
I
know.
Think about it, Ben.
Wall-to-wall
justice.
You
know, we could have
you
that banner and make
sailboat.
It a bed spread.
You turn it into one of the sails.
Well, now I'm on the hunt to get it.
Yeah,
you see? Listen, we can't thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
So much.
Well-deserved part.
Absolutely.
No, there was nobody better that could play that part. Really, just made that, really, just brought a whole realness and naturalness to it, which is the whole movie's about that.
Yeah.
And I thought you just blended that in so nicely. So congratulations.
Well, no,
to you.
Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of Maria, and you know, I anything for her.
Bye, Stephen Bishop. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
It's a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
That was intense.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Okay,
so here's what's wonderful about that is when you discover the guy that you're watching on screen is just as cool in person as you're hoping he is.
Well, that's just it. I mean, and I got to say, like, when I'm watching him play, you know, it was David Justice.
Yes. Yeah.
There was no disputing it.
And again, what I mentioned in the thing is that the producers were really concerned about fans not being able to get into the movie because they're so you know, they've got such, baseball fans have such eagle eyes about stats, about including were the laces intertwined with the pants. I mean, and they were scouring all of
the web. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
well, it was awesome. They said Michael Fisher, who he's credited with like The Blind Side, was the one who was doing the casting, and they had over 1,000 people come out for the tryouts, and they were specifically asking for people that not only could act but did have some sports background, and the people that had sports backgrounds.
There's nothing worse
to make
than watching a sports movie, and you know he's like, oh my god,
right.
Oh my god.
Especially
to be honest,
this movie.
I'd rather pull in. I mean, I don't know. There's kind of a flip side to every story, but, you know, do you look for the actor first and then the athletics? Or do you look for the athleticism
first? I think you look for that because you can adjust some things in post. You can get some editing.
Yes.
You can help.
Yeah.
You can help.
Absolutely.
But you can't fix bad athletics.
No.
No, you can't.
Absolutely
not.
There's nothing
you can do unless it's CG.
Yeah, unless you have a lot of money to make that.
That's why I like
watching
sport movies. I mean, it's like Friday Night Lights, you know, same kind of thing. I'm a big fan of that show. And
yeah, no, Stephen Bishop was in Friday Night Lights.
And actually, Stephen Bishop was in that too.
Absolutely.
So
that sounds familiar.
Okay, now speaking of the sports movie, now there's a lot of everybody thinks this is a sports movie. It's really not a sports movie. It just happens to happen in the world of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's got very little baseball in it if you're thinking it's a sports movie. Let's talk a little bit about the journey it took to become the movie. First, it started from the book.
Yes.
Written by Michael Lewis, called Moneyball, How to Win in a Rigged Game, I think is what it's called. And then it went through...
An Unfair Game,
thank you. Was an option. They had writers on it. They had other writers on it. They had directors on it. They had other directors on it. So it went through a bunch of different incarnations, and it strikes me the metaphor there is that just like Billy Bean had to field a team, they had to field a crew and a cast to get this thing made, because... It just didn't seem like it was ever going to make it to the big screen.
Two directors before it finally ended up with Bennett.
Right. Bennett Miller, who had previously directed Capote and was nominated for an Oscar for that as well.
I remember I was watching an interview with him, and he said, you know, it's pretty simple. He goes, just build it and they'll come. And he goes, I'm going to take a simple approach
at
making this movie.
But,
and already had Brad on board.
Yes, already had Brad on board. But and Brad kind of brought him in.
If you start this project and you take that book and say, well, it's a book about math, let's make math exciting, you will never get it off the ground.
How do you make the movie?
I don't know which writing team it was, but the ones who finally discovered, you know, sure, it's a story about baseball and math, but you've got a winning streak in here that they're going for. And you've got the father and
his
daughter.
That relationship
and they start to work all of the other aspects together, and you wrap it around Jonah and his, you know, his take on the
sabermetrics
and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's when it clicked.
They took the gloss off.
Yeah, the whole thing. They stripped it down, de-glossed it, de-shinied it.
Made it
very naturalistic. In fact, they were talking about the way it was shot. We'll talk about the way it was shot, and then we'll go back to the script, because I have to talk about the script. But since you talked about the de-gloss, it's one of the reasons why he brought in Wally Pfister, who's a cinematographer. He's known for, of course, Inception, won the Oscar for that. But he comes out of news and documentaries. And if you notice in the scene where they have all the scouts talking, very documentary style, all fluorescent lighting, so they got that feel there. And they didn't want to do anything with gloss. They wanted to use the natural light as much as possible and augment it where they could to make you feel
more realistic, though.
Rather
than you feel like you're in that locker room.
Rather than a story being told to you, it's kind of you observing the story, which is a big difference in how one experiences it. Yeah, and then the other thing they did with the lighting is, as you were talking about, during the outside scenes, especially during the baseball scenes, the stadium scenes at night, he shut down half of the lights. Because normally in an arena like that, all the lights are up, everything's really bright, and everything's flat. And he didn't think that created the right mood.
Yeah.
And in fact, I believe, if I'm correct, Bennett wasn't sure about that. He was like, I don't want to.
Well,
it's not going to look real.
It worked, though, for the film, basically.
But it worked for the film.
I don't know if it's Bennett or Pfister, but one of them said, look, the stadium is a character in this.
Yeah.
And we've got to present it as it is a living, breathing entity. And working with the lighting and the different shots they got, you did get that. When Billy Bean, the character, walks out and lies down on the ground, and the way that they did that just through video, those were the little moments where they were really able to capture that whole feel.
Yeah.
It's a huge game, but it boils down to one guy on a field
just middle of a stadium,
trying his best.
That's a really good point. I even like when you're talking about the stadium being a character, I mean, you get a really good glimpse of that when they actually lose the last game of the series.
Oh, spoiler alert!
The players start fading out. Yeah. You know, the crowd starts fading out.
Yes.
You're zooming in on the dugout. Well, everything.
It becomes a very small movie after that moment because it really is only about two guys.
Well, and there are other things that are very interesting. Bennett Miller said that Billy Beane has the weight of the world on his shoulder. He's an underdog, and to physically represent that, that's why they shot everything underground, underneath the stadium. All his office, his locker room, all that stuff with the fluorescent lights is to make him feel like he's always, they called it the submarine. So that's where that was to make you feel like he's under. He's an underdog.
Makes a lot of
right?
Sense.
Only when he's
in, only when he's in the arena do you see real light. And then couple that with at the end of the movie, he spent most of the time in Oakland. It's blue collar. You see the loading dock, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, very industrial.
Then he goes to Boston, Fenway Park, which is not notorious. It's infamous. And this is baseball hallowed ground. It's just like
It was still raining.
And where do they have the scene? They could have the scene anywhere. They could have the scene in the owner's office. They had them in the boxes,
right,
way up high, overlooking the hallowed ground.
So
you got to see. That's right.
Underdog.
In this world, he's struggling to be the under. He's an underdog. He's struggling like crazy to make it up here. And at the end of the movie, when he gets awarded that thing, it's way up top, looking out over hallowed. The green is the grass is green. It's gorgeous.
Right.
And it's Fenway. As opposed to Oakland Coliseum. You know what I mean?
There was a moment in the movie, and we lost a bit of time to talk about it because of that great time we got to spend with Stephen Bishop. But there was a moment in the movie when Brad Pitt comes at game 20, right?
Right.
And he's watching it.
During the streak. They've won 19 games in a row. Okay. This is their 20th game. If they win, they make the record.
It isn't until Jonah sees him there,
right,
that bad things start happening. And I've watched it a couple of times, and I'm trying to think, is it because he showed up, or is it because somebody knew he showed up? If no one had seen him, would all that have happened?
I think it's because Jonah saw him.
Yeah. That's the way it seemed it was shot.
Because the way it was shot, exactly. The way it was shot, it makes you believe that. It's like,
but
if
he
you
didn't know
seen him,
he didn't know he had been seen.
No, but we did.
Anyway, I thought it was such a great moment. And that was the thing about this movie for me. You ended up thinking about so many things.
Yeah.
The batting cage scene,
the scene you're talking about,
it's all underground and it's above ground.
That's good.
Rod Lurie.
I didn't even think of that.
Rod Lurie tweeted, "Moneyball is so layered and brilliant, I can't imagine how this out-survived research screenings."
How this cut survived research screenings.
How this cut survived research screenings.
That's true.
Because it's so layered.
Well, you're saying this is more of an independent film.
Yeah, it's an independent film and from a studio.
Yeah,
right.
Because
it's Bennett's first studio project, by the way.
Yes, exactly. Because the last thing he did was Capote, which was was an independent, and he had some trepidation about it. But he was obviously wanted to get into the movie because he'd working on something else that fell through. So
Fox
this thing came right in front of him.
That's actually
it's interesting because when he first read the stuff, he didn't know his way into the story either. He didn't know if he could tell the story. Is it possible to tell the story from this book? And then the thing he read from either the book by Michael Lewis, where it said that Billy Beane, the protagonist, wondered if he should be living a different life. And it was that thing that he started to, he goes, I can tell a story about a guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing the other part of that was the sabermetrics thing, which is the whole statistical analysis that Billy Beane pioneered.
That word.
And how he used that to create a contender.
Yes.
It also made him understand why he didn't fulfill his promise as a player. Because he was looked at 15 as being the next phenom.
Right. Skipped around about five different teams before he ended up with the A's.
All these adults who have been in the baseball for decades are saying, "You're it, kid. You can do it. Right in there." And he really wanted to go to college. He wanted to go to Stanford. His mother wanted to go to Stanford. But he chose the other route. He went with the money.
Yep.
And that was the other thing that Bennett picked, a check. He realized, aha, there's a check in the beginning. There's a check in the end. There's a decision here. There's a decision
here.
I can tell this story. Now it becomes a personal story.
You're right.
It just happens to be about baseball in that world, but it's really about a redemption. a guy knowing I made a mistake here in my life. It's led me here, and I've been striving like crazy to find the holy grail of winning the big game.
Uh-huh.
And in the end, he lets go of that and finds true value in himself.
Right.
And what he's really worth.
He was looking to course correct.
And they wouldn't have been able to make this.
Started out where he was leaving off.
And whoever it was that finally figured out that story arc and that journey.
Mm-hmm.
You have to assume that everything else just fell into place because that's what they really needed to hang this whole story on.
The other stuff is all just peripheral.
It out.
Right.
But it's that guy knowing, and you know, they never talk about it. They just show him, they show back flashes of his growing up and him, you know, being this phenomenal player that didn't meet up to his expectations.
Right.
And, you know, and then you show this guy just, and he never says, gosh, I'm trying to right a wrong. You just see that it's just part of who he is.
No, but you know it. You see it happening throughout the show.
Exactly.
You don't have to say it.
There was a lot of really good points or lines in the movie.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, well, one in particular is when the two New York Mets scouts are sitting across the table from a young Billy Bean.
Yeah.
And they make the comment to the point of, you're not going to know when, but at some point, you will not be able to. Can you play in the children's game?
Yeah, we all have to leave.
To that effect.
Yeah.
We don't know when, but
you
eventually.
Know, I kind of struggled with that. I'm looking at that, in the context of baseball.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, we as individuals say when we're done.
Right.
You know, and that moment right there was showing the influence of the perhaps maybe the older generation within baseball influencing the younger generation and just kind of giving a little bit of lip service to get him to play on.
That's
and they made mention in the movie too that no ball club in their right mind would have passed him up.
Right. He could have gone anywhere.
So that was also an interesting point when he's talking to the Jonah Hill character. He says
Peter
says, would you have drafted me in the first round?
Yeah.
And the kid goes, no.
Yeah,
it was ninth round.
Say
what?
And you would have gone to college. He's like, yeah, I would have. Okay. And so there were those moments.
But the
that's all they had to do.
But like you're talking about, the generational gap. You're talking about the older generation and the new generation.
Right, and you also saw the scouts.
Technology, sabermetrics.
All the scouts were older scouts. They'd been in baseball longer than he had.
Right.
They all knew what to do. And that scene in the locker room, not the locker room, but in the hallway of the submarine, so to speak, outside the locker room, when he's having a conversation with the lead scout.
Right.
He's saying, Billy, I don't know what you're doing here. And Billy says, look, I've been on that table. I've been at that table where you said, you're the next thing.
Yes.
You
know, exactly.
And you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I know you don't know what you're talking about. And he knows it because he didn't match up to those expectations.
No.
Exactly. You're right.
So, I mean, carry that through. You can't look at somebody. I mean, you don't know they really are or have everything and are going to be that person that you're drafting them to be.
That's fair, but that wasn't the conversation that was being held at that table. What was being held at the table was coercion from the scouts saying, this is your moment, and if you don't take it, you're going to miss it. And he had to carry that with him. And it's interesting that Billy Bean, the real person, went into being a scout. And I don't know if that was kind of like, I don't want the next kid, or if it's what it's the only thing I got to go with. But it was an interesting choice to go out of.
Yeah. And the other thing I found interesting about that, later on, at some point they're talking about, you never know. He needs to have more at bats. All the scouts are talking about, get this guy some more at bats.
Yeah.
And Billy never got those because he was jumped in right so soon that he never got that seasoning that you might need.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring in a vendor right now. So
tell you right now, I'm getting a little hungry.
Looks like a few minutes.
We're
a few minutes.
You know what works best with a movie?
Popcorn.
What works really good with a movie?
Best in a ballpark besides hot dogs.
Popcorn.
Well, Cracker Jacks. But if you can't get
Cracker Jacks, can you shudder?
What a stunning example. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Jess. I come with gifts.
Gifts?
You asshole.
We are sweet of you.
This stuff is like crack for me. I really don't think you should have
said I'll go to, whenever I'm eating or going food shopping, I will be carrying these around.
Okay.
This is like catnip.
I want the chips.
They're made from
popcorn. There we go.
The brand is Popcorn Indiana, and these are their infamous chip-ins.
These are great, but why are you here at the Kip Suite?
Why am I what?
Why are you at the Oscar style gift suite?
So tell us about Popcorn Indiana. Where do you manufacture these babies?
So they are based in Englewood, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
Don't be fooled by the name Popcorn Indiana. Indiana, but the corn's actually from Indiana.
All right.
Yeah, so they have tons of flavors. They also have sweet flavors as well. So if you're in the mood for a chocolate cake or a cinnamon sugar.
Wow.
Okay, next time. I'll bring them next time.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm craving salty, so that's why I brought... So
it tastes like a potato chip or popcorn?
So these are the actual popcorn, but they're chip-ins.
And that's where you started off with.
That's why I was confused. Because these are chips.
I know all about you, believe me. I know all about you.
Are the chips made from popcorn?
This is good stuff.
Yeah. So the reason that they came out with the chip-ins, and they're all...
How many can you eat?
Well, that's my other thing. That's why I'm here, because I'm obsessed.
Oh my gosh,
20.
Is that a challenge?
It's a serving.
Wait a minute, why are you obsessed about...
So I'm obsessed with the fact I can't stop eating one chip, and also if you try it, you won't either. So
don't start
if
eating
I have,
them
like,
now.
A big
I can
bag,
attest to that.
It's 260 calories, and I like
for an entire bag?
A huge bag.
This whole thing is only 260 calories?
My house is packed with this.
But it's still really good.
Okay, do you have more?
Oh, we have
I'm
more.
I'm just kidding.
We have
and
more.
You saw us all in the majors, right? I've seen it in Whole Foods.
So we'll see this at Ballparks around the country?
If you go to their website, popcornindiana.com, and you type in your zip code, they'll tell you all stores that they're in. And they'll also tell you, I'm not going to tell what flavors, so they have a lot of flavors coming out.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't want to give it to me. I was going to say, check it out
in about like 2 weeks and you'll see. So we're the company that first ever launched.
We will do that.
Popcorn.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you
for the gift. Please remind everybody where you are. Remind everybody where they can go get things.
Go to popcornindiana.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you so much.
All right.
You're like my popcorn fairy.
Let's clear these. All right. Now don't start eating these now. You'll never stop.
Don't start eating. It's going to sound horrible.
We won't be able to talk.
Exactly.
So you want those? You might need to clear those for the camera view. I don't remember what we were talking about. You needed to have seasoning to get his bat. Speaking of seasoning.
You
had to get enough bats in, and Billy didn't get that. And I thought that was interesting. Another parallel that they're playing with, that he came in too soon. Had he not taken the check, he might have gone on to have a great career. You never know.
Sure.
Right?
But he went in too early.
Influence.
Yeah, which is why, they're so careful about bringing young, great athletes into professionals, because they're just not there.
Right out of high school.
Talking about
the scouts.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It was an interesting blend, because some of the scouts were actors.
Yes.
And some of the scouts were scouts.
Actual scouts.
And what I was really interested about was the two scouts that were at the young Billy Beane's table.
From the Mets.
I could not tell if those were scouts or actors.
Yeah.
Because if they were actors, damn, they were really good at playing scouts.
Right.
But if they were scouts, they were really natural and, moving with that scene.
If you are the real thing, I feel like if you just play off that experience,
you just have to do that,
to act, it just...
Yeah. And if you notice... The way it was shot, they never really... the camera's out of there. It looked like the camera's out of their view, kind of like laying off, so they wouldn't have to worry about it being in their presence.
Right. Yeah.
And also, when they were doing the scout in the room, Billy Beane's room, his war room, so to speak.
Right.
It's very documentary. So he was behind things, and so all the scouts had to do was just pick a name. Yeah. What do you think about this guy? And then they just spout their stuff.
Just be themselves.
And they said that there was a lot of footage in that room to get all that stuff. They did a lot, and they edited a lot of that. They kept finding nuggets here and there. They kept putting it in. So they had a lot of coverage on that. So,
and the conversation was probably accurate, where they're talking about ugly girlfriend and stuff. You're thinking, my God, they're making decisions on guys' careers based on some sort of...
Baseball players, it's just like the entertainment business. Who you're with matters.
Bit, huh? Yeah, which
it does.
It does,
matter for
it
the
does only to them, but it doesn't matter in your skill level.
No. But I think when you're hiring a professional player, it really, really matters. Okay. Everything matters.
All right.
Okay, well, real quick, I want to just...
That sounds terrible,
We've
though,
got about 10 minutes.
Okay.
We've got to talk about Jonah Hill.
We've
got to talk about
Jonah
Hill. We'll talk Jonah.
There's a ton of stuff to talk about this movie.
Well, let's first say, how did he get the role?
How did Jonah get
the role? Well, this was interesting. I watched an interview, and, he is known for playing pothead characters.
Schlubby.
A little bit.
Kind of comic relief kind of thing.
His hair is always crazy. And a lot of Apatow movies.
Yeah.
Yes. They grew up together. They have a long history together. And so Catherine Keener actually recommended Jonah Hill to Bennett Miller.
Catherine Keener worked on Capote with Bennett Miller, the director.
Right. Yes. And there were 10 plus other actors that were going in that were all Oscar-nominated actors. And so obviously Jonah Hill's not known as a dramatic actor.
No.
So he made up an audition and invited Bennett Miller. Made up an audition, not an audition, I'm sorry. He made up a reading to a show he had already done, not knowing that Bennett Miller had seen the show. Invited Bennett Miller in for a reading, thought he was going to show him. He wrote this big part. Bennett Miller already saw the show.
Yeah. Huh.
Gave him the role 2 days later. And this is interesting. He said, Moneyball.
Yeah.
It's a story about people who have been overlooked because of preconceptions about what they can do.
And Jonah
if you
Hill,
think about it, Jonah Hill's characters, he's never done a real dramatic
totally
role.
Represents the spirit of the
fact. I just thought
it was such a natural, pulled back, moment-driven performance.
Right.
That I'm just...
And, most of the comedy came from Brad, actually.
Right.
On those things. He'd say, it's better work.
Yeah.
just kidding. Yeah. Things like that. Normally that would be Jonah's role to say crud like that.
Right. But the reason why it worked, the reason why it's funny is because that
Jonah plays straight man.
I mean, when it's the deadline for the trades, they're in the office,
right.
They're on the phones, they're going back and forth, and you really see Jonah's character just kind of be that kind of geeky, laid-back kid when he couldn't even, high-five him. It was just kind of like...
Okay, that was so awkward and funny. Yeah. But, when we were watching it, you were talking about how, he's doing such a great job acting. He's just, playing himself.
Right.
When he really wasn't playing himself, that was completely opposite of who he really is.
Right.
I feel that was out of the box for him.
Again, what I was trying to make...
Very, very well.
It's not playing himself, but...
That character, or what did you mean?
There were elements of Jonah Hill that, when you see in an interview, that he brought those to the forefront and kind of brought the other ones back.
Yeah, when he's not
on, and he just kind of rearranged,
and he's more quiet and thoughtful, then you completely see it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And
and good for him for being restrained and pulling it back and being small about it, because it really shows his versatility.
Yes,
got a nomination for crying out loud.
You know, it's so funny. I watched an interview on the Today Show with him and Brad Pitt. And he's just so... It's like he's kitty.
He can't believe he's...
It's a great role for him, but you can tell. You can
I see him kind of being a little smitten by Brad, you know? Just kind of like...
Oh, it shows.
Oh, I saw a lot of the interviews. Like, he did one for YouTube and stuff. And every one of them, he's still kind of blown away by what's happening.
Yeah.
And just, and he is. Giddy is a great word for it.
He's really... This was a movie to show how much he's grown as an actor and the depth that he has.
Let's talk a little bit about the look of it, because we did a little touch on it because, Wally Pfister and his cinematography and... And we talked about the lighting and things like that, using fluorescent lights downstairs and creating the submarine. But Bennett was very specific. He wanted to go for that really natural, stripped-down, no-gloss look. Mm-hmm. They started talking about films like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest The Godfather and Parallax View, and even The President's Men by, I forget the name of the cinematographer on that. I'll find that in a second. But it was interesting because he said that, The President's Men. And I remember the scene when Brad Pitt first is talking to Jonah Hill outside of the offices of the Cleveland Indians, and they're down in the garage.
Oh, okay, by the elevator.
Yes. I mean, completely all The President's Men with Robert Redford and Dean Crow in the garage.
Baseball.
It was amazing.
And, if you think about it, when he comes walking through the cubicles and goes, "Who are you?" That was could have been the Washington Post. Was the Washington Post with Redford and Duffman, Hoffman, going through that sort of big maze. That also had that sort of feel, that look, and that sort of,
just the cubicles alone is all The President's Men. They're always going through the cubicles.
Yeah. That's what I was trying
Gordon
to say.
Gordon Willis, by the way, is the cinematographer of those movies. Gordon Willis, All the President's Men, Parallax View, Godfather. I thought it was extremely effective. Because, I was surprised at how stripped down it was. But then after a while, I just thought it was great.
Yeah. All in all, it was such an amazing film.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is that the struggles that the studios went through and the struggles that the A's went through, I mean, the storyline, that their Moneyball is an odds-on favorite to win.
Is it really?
Here at the Oscars.
Is it really?
I mean,
I didn't know it was an odds-on favorite.
Yeah.
Okay,
do you know what the odds are for Jonah Hill?
For Jonah Hill, I don't.
Let's check the sabermetric schedule.
I would think it's fair to say that. Yeah. I mean, for supporting actor, I thought he was great. Brad, I want to see Brad walk off with an Oscar. I really do.
Okay, here's a bone of contention that I discuss with you. Best supporting, Philip Seymour Hoffman doesn't get a nod.
Abe.
Oh, what do you mean?
Awesome. He was amazing.
He was
okay, awesome in this thing.
You know, the character that he actually played was upset because he said, I watched an interview with him and he said, that is not how I act. He is heavier than me. I don't have those same mannerisms. And he feels...
You know what? That sounds exactly
wait, he
like...
Feels what?
He feels like it has hurt his career because of this movie and the way
that's
he was
bold.
Depicted by...
That's pretty bold.
What did I say? What did I say at the beginning of the movie?
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Do you remember what I said? I said, when it started, I said, what's surprising is that manager signed off on this portrayal. Because it is not a real complimentary portrayal of that manager.
Right.
But he
Philip does
he
villain
it.
Well. Not to say this character was a villain, however, right. He just has that,
I
angst
totally
about
believed,
him when, yeah, when Philip's acting. I mean,
yeah,
he just.
But,
totally believe.
We
oh,
had
by the way, that
goofy
little walk that Brad Pitt would did at the end
yes,
of that one
yes.
thing, that was directly to Philip Seymour Hoffman, because that's how he would walk around the set.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
so that's why he threw
cute.
It back at him.
That's
a
cute.
A little AfterBuzz exclusive right
here.
Oh, nice.
You were talking about that with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Oh, he did such a great job. And I'm
yes.
like, well, of course. It's like, wait, where are the standards there? Of course he did a great job. He's a great actor. He's supposed to do a great job.
Oscar.
I thought I was watching a baseball manager as opposed to watching an actor play a baseball
absolutely.
Manager.
Absolutely.
That's the difference.
That's because he's such a great
it was
actor.
Jam-packed with
well,
a great cast,
I think
period.
It's hysterical that the actual guy is all pissed off at it.
Yes. I mean,
it's
it was a
movie.
Long,
wait a minute, though.
It was a long interview, and he feels it's hurt him.
But doesn't that quote kind of sound like the guy that Philip Seymour Hoffman was portraying?
That's true. I mean, that's true.
It's kind of like...
Maybe not.
And he did have a problem with the size.
I mean,
if
you
did.
Can't get work as a manager based on what you
me.
Did with the team, I think it has more to do with something else than Philip Seymour Hoffman's portrayal of you.
Now,
you could
now,
tell there was an underlying edge. There was an underlying edge in the interview. Something...
Here's it with everything being said. Here's
okay.
what I liked about how they portrayed him was his point of view was absolutely legitimate. And he says, I'm just trying to line up the interviews I'm going to have when you screw up this season. So yeah. it was a great moment where they said it's not just Brad or Billy Bean. It's everybody's on the line on this thing. And everyone is either going to succeed or they're going to walk away as a
yes.
failed experiment. And I thought that was a wonderful moment for them to, you know, kind
absolutely.
Of even that out a little bit.
Yeah.
This movie just kind of showed you what clear intention means. That you go into it feet first, all in, no matter what the consequences. Billy Bean's back was up against the wall. He took charge, and it was his generation versus the older generation. It was something new, taking people outside of their comfort zone.
Yep.
You know, and that's why there was all that angst
yeah, didn't
coming
he say
from Hart.
We either have to adapt or die. I think that's a line he used.
That's just
and
life.
You do
that's
have
a metaphor
that is,
for life.
Exactly,
as far as
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
concerned.
It's not just in Moneyball. That's with everything. And you do. You have to adapt or you will die.
We get passionate over here.
Ouch.
What do you guys think of Karis Dorsey singing?
Oh, that's great.
I thought it was so cute.
For me,
it
was adorable.
She's adorable.
It's
awesome.
Cute. What was she, 13? Yeah. It was a...
It's
yeah.
not
it
even
was
her song. However,
cute,
I could have thought that...
Lenka?
It's from Lenka.
Like,
yeah.
she sang that.
Yeah, it's great. She's so an Australian
you know,
artist.
I read a comment from some reviewer that said that it was melodramatic and...
What was melodramatic?
Her singing at the end and all that other stuff. And I go, it sounds like somebody who doesn't have kids or just can't... even
no,
fathom that.
I don't have children, charming. And it had a huge impact, I felt, at the end of the show, because his relationship with his daughter, while it didn't show a whole lot of it,
yeah, but
if you read about Billy Bean outside of the show,
yeah.
him and his daughter are extremely close, and he even considered moving to another
Bean.
Team
right.
while she was going to college just to be close to her.
And that's what I think is great about the movie.
So
is it really isn't
a
about baseball. It's about
no,
a guy finding
no.
value
so
in
many
substance
different layers.
In his life.
Mm-hmm.
It's an onion.
Exactly, it's true.
I mean,
completely layered.
So
I know, we
and
got
it's,
a few
and it's
layers.
So not you know, your traditional studio movie. It doesn't have the same kind of vernacular. It doesn't have the montages. It doesn't have a, you know, spiffy.
But it didn't need it.
It has
it
very little
it.
Music in it except for that song.
No, I know. We were talking about the music, and it's like, there was music?
Yeah.
I didn't even remember.
So much of it is natural.
I think you said it, or somebody said it, where it was the moments there wasn't music is how effective that soundtrack is.
They just let
the silence
is play.
By Michael Dana, and he's done Imaginarium, Dr. Parnassus, Capote, Hearts of Atlantis, Little Miss Sunshine, 500 Days of Summer. He's got like almost 100 credits on this thing.
Wow.
And I've found a lot of information about everything but Moneyball.
Yeah.
He just didn't do a lot of interviews.
But again, such restraint. Again, that naturalistic thing. Rather than having some score swell you and tell you what to feel emotionally, you have to read it all on Brad's face.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I really, really enjoyed about it, was they weren't allowing the music to cue the scene.
Right.
So you were just sitting in there with them
and here's
on the ride without any
sort of... One of the most interesting and effective ways of not having any music was in the 20th... Was it the 20th game? No, the game they lost. When the guy's at bat and he hits the ball.
Okay.
Yes.
It goes silent. There's nothing.
Right.
You don't know if he hit. You don't know. You can't hear the crowd noise if it was a home run.
No.
You stay on the batter as he's running down, and he's watching the ball too. You don't know what's happened. There's no noise, and you have to wait and get your cues from the guys behind the guy running, and they start jumping, and then you know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But typically in a movie, you know, the natural. I mean, all the music would kick in, all that stuff, or whatever.
Well, it does.
Or
the music has such a huge impact on how you're going to feel in every scene.
Yeah, that's where I think they took a lot of risk. They took a lot of risk and things like that.
They really did take a lot of risk, because you were talking about it being an independent movie out of a studio, and it's. I guess you'd have to have a certain amount of. Power, I don't know, to be able to
Brad,
say
Brad Pitt.
Well,
there you go.
Brad Pitt.
But to be
really
able to say, you've got to trust this.
Yeah.
You've got to trust, and no, we don't need more action sequence.
And
we don't need this. We're going to go with the moments.
Yeah, and based on their, they put it in front of audience, their test screenings. Based on their test screenings were coming back, leave it the way it is. So it was confirmed.
Yeah.
Everything that Brad and Bennett were trying to create, this naturalistic, leave it alone, just trust it.
Exactly.
It was finally confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm just glad the project wasn't benched, because it was at first.
Yeah, clearly,
The studio benched it.
Yeah, they pulled it.
Against them.
The writers, they were $10 million, and they had to start at square one.
They hadn't seen the light of day yet. Yeah. So, kudos to Brad.
Yeah.
And Brad bringing on Bennett, because Moneyball was made.
What do you think it was like for Billy Bean to be in a room and they go, okay, so yeah, it's going to be a movie, and Brad Pitt's going to play you?
Well, it's interesting.
You go,
I did read the... There was an article, I can't remember where I read it.
Did he think it was never really going to happen?
Yeah, but
anyway,
Billy Bean,
he
had the release form he had to sign, and he was considering it, and the person he talked to was Michael Lewis, the author of the book. And
okay.
He goes, again, Brad Pitt is, you want Brad Pitt? And he's looking at the release form, and Michael Lewis goes, sign it, they're never going to make the movie.
Right.
So he goes, okay, so he signs it.
Last words.
Yeah.
It'll never be a light of day.
I hope that Billy Bean is as proud of the movie and the acting that Brad did portraying him as I was as a fan just watching the film.
Yeah.
I think it was amazing.
All right, let's bring in a new guest. We have another guest.
All right, we have
Madison Beatty.
We have Madison Beatty.
Hi.
Hello.
Did Benjamin Button with Brad Pitt.
Oh.
Nice to meet you.
Wonderful. Hi.
Madison, good to meet you.
Good, thanks for joining us.
So, you worked with him, was he when he was young or when he was old? When he was, which part of the...
You got the old Brad Pitt.
That sounds so horrible.
Old good-looking or old baby?
Was he attractive when you met him? And I would say, well, he was like 60 when I met him, so I don't know what I can say to that.
But age does funny things.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
He's so, so sweet. I saw him at the premiere, and he didn't recognize me because it had been like 3 years, and I was going through my awkward stage. But he recognized me at the premiere, and he's
so
sweet.
Yeah, how was that experience being on that set with him? Did you guys enjoy yourselves?
Oh, it was crazy. It was the first project I'd actually done, so already it was, oh my gosh, I'm on set. And then on top of that, it's a Brad Pitt set. He really makes his sets just like family, and it was truly a great experience.
Have you seen Moneyball then?
He's great. He talks about his family like nonstop.
Well, he's got a lot of family to talk about.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a TV show right there.
12,
did you happen to catch Moneyball?
I don't remember.
I did.
And your thoughts?
I really liked it.
Are you a baseball fan?
Yes, I am. I don't watch a lot of sports, but I watch my baseball.
Okay.
And I loved Moneyball because it was a good family movie. I mean, it had my drama and the little girl in it was so, so adorable.
She was precious.
Yeah, and then my brother was able to watch it because it had the baseball, and it's a good family movie for everybody. It was great.
Cool. Yeah, I just couldn't get behind the mathematics of it all. I have a hard time with math. That's why baseball didn't quite mesh. However, watching this movie, It was, I thought that it really told the story well of the game and the people that are involved in it. And Brad always talked about, as Billy Bean, the romance
of baseball.
The game.
Yeah.
I feel like I really understood what he was saying.
It's so true. It's really beautifully told. I think that last scene is my favorite, when he puts in the CD and he hears his daughter sing. That was such a beautiful scene.
And you know what? I think that CD was meant for him to listen to if he moved. Because did you hear on the CD it says, if you've already left, you're hearing the CD.
Oh, okay.
And she made him that CD
maybe
play.
Maybe that's the reason why he stayed.
If you move, you remember?
Yeah.
I also remember the part in there, she's like, you're a loser, Dad. You're a loser, Dad. I was like, whoa. But I mean, I'll admit, I dropped a tear out of that, because you could really see how vulnerable he was with his daughter, you know, outside of the ball. That's just...
Well, and to be able to show that soft spot, and I mean, I think it was beautiful, and especially when a man usually is supposed to come, you know, they want to be all macho, and the fact that he was able to show that vulnerability.
I know, such an old man.
Don't all the guys out there. Nothing wrong with that.
You know, that's the one thing I really enjoyed about Moneyball was that portrayal of Billy Bean, of not being the big macho guy, of not being like, I'm in control. There was only a few moments in that movie where he like dropped the hammer. Yeah. Other than that, he just had his agenda. He moved through it, and he got people around him to say, okay.
One of my favorite moments is when, you know, he's great on the phone, he's making all these deals, and then he's in his car and he goes, what the hell am I doing?
Exactly.
So there you go. As confident as he is, and he's alone in his truck, what the hell am I doing?
Uh-huh. Then everything just kind of falls apart.
Exactly. Yeah.
The fact that they were able to show all different sides of that was, I loved it. I really did love it. I hope it does well at the Oscars.
Now, you said you're a baseball fan?
Somewhat.
Somewhat.
I'm really bad at like the names of the players.
Who's your team? Who's your team?
Dodgers.
Hometown girl.
I'm from Denver, so it used to be like the Rockies.
Sure, but now you're a hometown girl.
Here it's the Dodger Dogs, and I have a Dodger Snuggie.
Oh, you got the Snuggie action going.
Yeah. Denver's got to have better food.
I don't know. It does have better
barbecue. Certainly have a better airport.
It has better
what? Yes, we do. You know, the airport opened the day I was born.
Really?
Yeah, February 28th, 1995.
Look at you.
It's crazy. It. Very crazy.
Yeah, I love Denver. Beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah, it's a good place.
So I got to ask, and I know you've kind of indicated how great it is working with someone like Brad, you know, when he's on set and he kind of commands a certain, he's got an aura about him.
He does.
What's it like to be, you're brilliant in Benjamin Button, and
thank
to
you
have
so much.
You kind of interacting, like, what was that like for you?
For me, when you first get to set, literally running through your mind is, oh my gosh, I'm working with David Fincher and Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett, and a part of me didn't really know it to the caliber that it was, but I just knew they were really big names.
Probably
and they
not a bad thing, right?
No. I mean, these days, if I don't know who someone is,
Kate
I won't
Blanchett.
Look them up,
because
it trips me out. So you get there, and you're really nervous, and I have very sensitive skin, so I break out when I get nervous. And so I remember walking in the makeup trailer, and then Kate Blanchett was actually there for a wig fitting, and she immediately turned to me and was like, Madison, it's so nice to meet you, and that's the thing about those kind of sets, though, when it's those people that have been doing it long enough to know exactly how it works, they really make you feel right at home, and to have that opportunity, because when you get there and you're stressed, it's way too hard to focus on your work, but once you are able to relax, then it's just about the work and nothing about who they are.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is there anything you're currently working on that you can let us know about? Or
yes.
What's that?
I actually just
she starts glowing.
Oh, I like it.
I'm very excited. I just finished working on The Master, which is the new Paul Thomas Anderson film, and it stars Joaquin Phoenix and Amy Adams.
Wow.
And we're waiting to hear if it'll go to Cannes.
Oh,
and
nice.
If not, then probably Vancouver. And so.
Oh, I'm Canadian, so.
Well, I vote for Cannes.
That's what we'll certainly look at. Yeah. Call The Master.
Either or. I'd love
would be
to
great.
Travel.
Vancouver or Cannes? You're going to wear a bathing suit at one of them.
I'm not getting any love over here.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we got to wrap this up. We want to thank you so much for stopping by and talking to us and sharing
with
us.
It was fun.
We'll look for Madison Beatty, everybody. We'll look for the Masters.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, well, we got final thoughts because we got to get out of here. Anything you want to say about Moneyball?
It's like I said, going back to that comment, you know, being the odds-on favorite, considering all its tribulations and whatnot that it went through, and the only thing that I can say is this movie made me realize.
Okay, we got to wrap it up, guys. That'll be the final thought. They're giving me the sign. We got to go. So we want to thank you so much for joining us here on another AfterBuzz TV podcast here at the Kari Feinstein Oscar Style Lounge and Gift Suites. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Buzz you later.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.